The next case in our calendar is 05-1351-1361, Douglas Hortman versus the City of Miamisburg. Mr. Sertic.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Robert Sertic. I'm an attorney from Dayton, Ohio, with the law firm of Sertic, Dowd & Turner. I have the pleasure today of being here on behalf of the City of Miamisburg, Ohio, as a result of a certified conflict between the decision issued by the Second District Court of Appeals in this case and decisions issued by the Fifth District in the case of Petiti versus Plain Township Board of Zoning Appeals and a decision issued by the 10th District in the case of Dellendorf versus Jefferson Township. The certified conflict issue is whether the doctrine of promissory estoppel is applicable against the political subdivision when it's engaged in a governmental function. The Second District Court of Appeals has established the point that the doctrine of promissory estoppel can be used to create a cause of action against the political subdivision engaged in the governmental function. In this case, the court has allowed a cause of action to proceed to trial based upon a representation by a city engineer and a single council member that certain trees would not be destroyed or disturbed during the course of making road improvements. In making its decision, the Second District Court of Appeals has ignored a long string of cases issued by this court upholding the principle that the doctrine of estoppel cannot be utilized as defense against the government when engaged in a governmental function. On no less than seven occasions, this court has upheld that particular principle. The other two cases, the Dellenhoff Court and the Petiti case, in those cases, the courts of appeals chose to follow the direction of this court. In the Dellenhoff Court, they determined that no contract existed, and despite the request on the part of the plaintiff to find the existence of a contract under which a developer would be entitled to pursue a claim for damages, they chose not to, citing the very cases which we rely upon today. In the Petiti case, the court relied upon the principle of equitable estoppel and determined as well that that doctrine would not preclude the city or the township from proceeding with the enforcement of the township zoning resolution. It's our position that the Second District Court of Appeals decision should be rejected for a number of reasons. Think first of all that the court in the Second District Court of Appeals relied upon the case of State versus First Inc., which was a case that was before this court in 1991, I believe, in which the court then dismissed as the appeal being improvidently granted. And in this court's decision, ordered that the decision not be published and that the opinion itself be used only inter se. Despite the instructions from this court, the Second District Court of Appeals has relied upon that decision in making its decision in this case, the Hortman case. And there have also been several other courts of appeals which have made reference to the first case as well.
Did that come up during the oral argument of the case? Did that come up before the oral argument of that case in the Second District?
I was not there, Your Honor. I do not believe it did, however, in reviewing the briefs that were presented to the court.
Thank you.
Also, we believe that in the Second District Court of Appeals in making its decision, did not really clearly take a look at the concept of estoppel. This court has established and has made reference to many cases in the past that the doctrine of promissory estoppel is based upon basically three principles: that there's a clear and unambiguous promise, there's a reasonable and foreseeable reliance, and that there's an injury resulting from that reliance. In this particular case, we do not believe that the individuals, the Portmans, could have had a reasonable reliance upon any statements that may have been made to them by the representatives of the City of Miamisburg. This case, this court in 2003 in the case of Shampton versus the City of Springboro, made comment upon the fact that individuals who do business with the government have to take heed and be cautious and to make a determination as to what the limitations may be upon those authorities when making agreements on behalf of the city. The court said, persons seeking to enter into contractual relationship with a government entity are on constructive notice of statutory limitations on the power of the entity's agent to contract. So in other words, in this, there can not be any reasonable reliance upon a comment that may be made by an individual associated with the government, so therefore the doctrine of promissory estoppel would not apply. Yes, Your Honor.
Aren't you stretching that a little bit? Read that quote back again.
The quote, as I've written it, Your Honor, says that persons seeking to enter into a contractual relationship with a government entity are on constructive notice of statutory limitations on the power of the entity's agent to contract. And by
And would you bring that then to this case?
I'm sorry?
Would you transpose that over to this case?
Yes, I would, and that was my next point, Your Honor. In this particular case, the Hortmans were under the belief that the city engineer and the single council member who may have made these representations could contractually bind the city at the time those statements were made. However, as the court has pointed out, that they have an obligation and duty to make a determination as to what the statutory limitations may be upon those individuals to contract on behalf of the city. They should have determined, first of all, that these individuals did not have the power to bind the city to such an agreement.
So are we to say to citizens, whatever the mayor, whatever a councilman, whatever the safety service director comes out and tells you about any project that's going in front of your house or by your house, doesn't mean a thing?
I don't think we're going that far, Your Honor. I think what we're saying is that individuals who make these comments, who listen to the comments, have to really make a determination before they rely upon those comments.
But, counsel, weren't these comments allegedly made in a government or Miamisburg-sponsored meeting for information to be shared with the residents who were affected by the project?
That's my understanding, that those comments were made at either one or two public meetings that were conducted by the city.
And the project engineer and the city councilman for the area were present in their official capacities at those meetings?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you're still saying, under those circumstances, it was in error for a citizen invited to that meeting to receive information about a project to take the word of the project engineer and a city councilman?
I don't think that they could take that to the point, as the Court of Appeals has taken it to the point, to say that that constituted a contract between the two parties.
Okay,
that's my point I'm making.
Right, and I don't think that we have any problem with saying that the contract, a express contract, oral contract, is non-existent. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the quote quasi-contract of a promissory estoppel is what we're really arguing about here.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And then you're saying that because that inherently does not apply to Miamisburg or any other municipality, we will forget about promissory estoppel.
I think you're saying that because of the issue of reliance, there's an issue as to the ability of one to rely upon those comments as to create a contract, that there is no legitimate basis upon which the citizen could make that reliance. And that's for several reasons. I think that, first of all, it's done for a public policy reason. You can't have individuals who make statements in public meetings creating contracts on behalf of political subdivisions. Those statements can be made by a person who is uneducated as to what the nature of the issue may be, who may be uninformed, that may just not have the specific facts in which to make that particular
statement. There's mistakes that could be made.
Yeah, that can be made. And there's a particular process which has been established through statute by which a municipality or a county or a township can be bound contractually. And it's very important that before a political subdivision can be bound contractually, that
you better be dealing with the law department or somebody that has the authority to enter into a contract on behalf of the city.
Right.
All right. Let me ask you a question about, I think, the third element, and that's damages.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that these trees that were destroyed were in the right of way.
That's my understanding as well, based upon the project documents.
So, did the Hortons suffer any damage by the loss of those trees?
Well, as we've briefed in our appeals, Your Honor, we do not believe that they did in fact were in fact damaged as a result of that. Those trees were in the permanent right of way, subject to the ability of the municipality to take whatever action was necessary within the right of way to establish this road project. So we don't believe that there was any injury that did in fact occur to them.
What about the elm tree that was damaged by the excavation, which I believe was not in the right of way?
You know, I can't make a determination for the record as to whether or not all of the elm tree or only a portion of the elm tree was in the right-of-way, but at least the roots of the elm tree were in the right-of-way.
Okay, I didn't get that impression from
which
the
which
brief.
Were exposed, okay. Which necessitated the removal of the tree itself. So there was damage to the root structure, which apparently justified the removal of that particular tree, and the root structure was within the right-of-way. So again, the municipality would have had the right to take whatever action was necessary within the right-of-way to develop the road project.
In the Court of Appeals opinion, it stated, federal courts have long recognized that if estoppel were not available against the United States in contract disputes, it would give government negotiations an unfair advantage to lay traps for unsuspecting business people. Now, I think that, and it goes on, I think what they're talking about there is formal contracts. Would you?
That was my understanding as well. And
I think that would be distinguishable from what we have before us today.
That's my position as well, Your Honor.
If this had been a written contract, it would be a different story.
Totally different story, Your Honor. If, in fact, it was a formal contract that was entered into in accordance with law, then I do believe that individuals would have the right to rely upon that. But if, in fact, you did have a formal contract, you wouldn't have the need then to lapse into this discussion in regards to promissory estoppel, because you already have a contract. You're not attempting to create a contract by the utilization of that particular doctrine.
Okay. Underlying your theory in this case is that you have an immunity.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's what generated the entire controversy, because we raised
whether or not there's promissory estoppel here.
That's correct.
Even if there were, you're immune.
That's correct. And that's what generated the controversy, because we raised that as our defense in our motion for summary judgment, which was subsequently overruled by the court, which found that there was a basis for the promissory estoppel, which resulted in a contract which then took it out of the exception for the application of 2744. And we, of course, disagree with that position and don't believe that there is a need for the court to create such a document and should not, or such a contract, and that the application of immunity should be applied in this particular case.
Counsel, is the Mr. Horton, who is the original plaintiff here, does he even have standing to bring this action?
Well, Donald Horton was the father who
passed
away, and we have the two sons. That was not an issue that I believe was raised in the trial court. However, it does raise a question as to whether or not, in fact, does. There is a representation in the record, Your Honor, that the two sons, who are presently the plaintiffs, were present at the time of the meeting and did, in fact, hear the representation made by the counsel, and based upon that representation, signed the work permission slip. And I believe that was the basis upon which one believed that
they weren't the property owners at the time they signed the work permission slip.
I'd have to check the record, but I believe they may have been.
They were? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I wasn't sure that.
And, Your Honor, I must confess, I'm not totally sure on the timing of that, but I believe they, in fact, were.
Okay.
So basically, what we're, in fact, asking the court is to do two things today. We're requesting this court to, again, uphold its position that the doctrine of estoppel cannot be utilized against a governmental entity when engaged in a governmental function. We believe this is also an opportunity for this court to clarify the concepts of equitable estoppel and promissory estoppel, which seem to be used interchangeably by different courts throughout the state of Ohio. We believe that this case, in this particular case, that the governmental principles of ensuring that the financial integrity of the governments be protected and that the statutory requirements for public contracting be upheld are very important, and that is one of the primary reasons why we believe that in this particular case the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals should be rejected, and that this court should reinforce its prior decisions and accept the rulings as set forth in the Court of Appeals decisions from the 5th and 10th District. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sirdick. Mr. Convoy.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, Honorable Justices, my name is P.J. Conboy. I represent the appellant Doug Hortman and David Hortman in this matter. This case is present before this court because of a summary judgment decision ruled on by the Montgomery County Court of Common Pleas.
Counsel, if you take away the authority of the first case, where does that leave you?
I still believe I have a promissory estoppel issue based on Ohio Revised Code Section 274409. It does say civil actions to recover damages for contractual liability. It doesn't say a contract has to be in writing or oral, and promissory estoppel is a quasi-contract invoked to form a contract. So if promissory estoppel forms a contract, then I believe that 274409 would cover that and the city would not be immune. Back to the Court of Appeals did issue a decision, decided that our promissory estoppel claim should have survived summary judgment, and the case was reversed and remanded back to the Second District, and we're in front of this court on a certified conflict. Appellees would request that the court issue an order affirming the question that the doctrine of promissory estoppel is applicable against the political subdivision, even when they're engaged in a governmental function based on the facts of our case. The facts of our case are as follows. Promissory estoppel, the issue of promissory estoppel, first there's a promise. The city engineer, Robert Stanley, he has signed an affidavit. It's page 489 of the supplement in this case. He said that he managed the roadway project and he was the one that approved the work agreement. Based on that, my clients relied on his promises in signing off on the work agreement. Secondly, the map given to my clients, which is 402, of the supplement has X's on the trees that are supposed to be destroyed. The trees on the Maui side and on the Linden side, some are in the right-of-way, some are not X'd, yet they were destroyed anyway. My client also relied on that map in deciding to allow this road project to proceed. My client did sign two work release agreements. The first one was signed in March of 2001. That was just on the Maui road side. And the second one was signed in June of 2002, and that was signed after the tree was already destroyed.
Counsel, what would have happened? What would have been the next step if your client had refused to agree? Would they have gone to eminent domain then?
I think we would have filed a motion for an injunction and tried to resolve the case in the court.
But they could have used eminent domain because it was a public roadway?
Yes, but some of the trees were outside of the right-of-way.
But that doesn't stop eminent domain.
Right, correct, Your Honor. Okay. The Supreme Court has... case of Ohio State Board of Pharmacy versus France, it says, in general, estoppel does not apply to political subdivisions. It doesn't say all the time it does not apply. Some of the cases cited by the city are not on point in this case. They include a McCroskey case. The reason estoppel wasn't granted in that case was because the elements of estoppel were not met, not because estoppel does not apply to a city. Also,
do you believe that we need to overrule or modify any of our current decisions on estoppel for your client to prevail?
No, I do not, because most of the cases that are cited either deal with equitable estoppel or do not deal with the facts pertinent to our case. Our case, there was a promissory estoppel, and it should be treated as a contract. Most of the cases cited by their side deal with equitable estoppel, which requires an act or a forbearance, as opposed to a promise, which happened in this case. Other cases cited by the city were Bezzy Corp, which was a failure to act case, had nothing to do with a promise. Howler versus EMIGH, which is a zoning inspector case, making an erroneous statement, still had nothing to do with a promise. So most of the cases cited by the city have nothing to do with a promise as there is in this case. The reality in this matter is government has to contract with individuals and the government should be treated as individuals since they have to contract with individuals. We would ask the court, based on that, to overrule the proposition of law cited by the city and ask the court to decide in the affirmative the certified conflict question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Conboy. Mr. Sertic, you've saved a little more than 30 seconds of your time. 36 seconds, to be exact.
I have no additional arguments to make to the court.
Okay. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.